Hey.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. First press junket.
First ever.
Oh,
we'll be gentle.
Good old Skelliger.
I want to start off with a geek question.
Yes, okay.
This has to do with the names.
You beat me to
it. Rebecca and Martin, was that in reference to Romero and Hitchcock?
Nope.
Oh, man. Because immediately I just thought of Rebecca Hitchcock's movie and how there's some interesting parallels that go between those two movies. You can in the future pretend it is.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, but I would have been named Rebecca if I was a girl, and my little brother's named Martin, so.
Gotcha.
And Sophie, my middle name is Sophia, so Sophie is from that.
I like how you pronounce that.
Sophia?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Swedish as well, yeah.
Okay, nice. I'm seeing Skeletor.
Yes.
Yeah. So what kind of material did you grow up on that has sort of influenced your creative path? And material that you're interested in writing?
Lots of horror movies and stuff. But my taste has sort of changed. Like, when I was a kid, I used to watch a lot of, sort of, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, a lot of Italian horror movies from, like, the 70s and 80s. But, you know, at that time, I liked sort of gory horror movies and stuff like that. Now I'm more about sort of suspense and mood and creating something that's not really about blood.
German expressionism in there?
Sure.
Yeah. Playing with shadows and whatnot?
Yeah, no, I mean, that I love that stuff.
Yeah. Can I ask you just two, they may seem super random, but they've been bothering me. Why does he drive a Volvo, and why does he have colorful socks?
The Volvo is because...
Sweden.
It's partly
that's
because...
That's what they said.
No, but it's also because he's... Like, he is this sort of rocker dude, so you think he's going to be this irresponsible guy, but he's actually sort of very responsible. So he drives a safe car, and he's like, he's actually the one in the relationship who wants a relationship, who wants commitment. And that's sort of pays off in the end, where he's does the responsible thing and gets the hell out of there and gets help. So it's like, I wanted to sort of subvert that thing. So, like, Rebecca doesn't want any attachment, so she's like, oh, I'm going to be with this rocker dude. He's not going to want attachment, but he's actually the one who wants to.
And he's supposed to be this a big happy puppy character, sort of. So the socks is probably just that feeling.
I expected a Cheval, a Charger.
Well, that's stereotype rockers.
Yeah, but we are Swedish, so we would have chosen Volvo because of that as well.
He's the one character that you said before that the flat expectations, because everybody else, if you've seen enough of these movies, you can kind of get an idea where the character is going to go for.
Yeah,
you get his character, you know, the boyfriend who. Character, actor-wise, we've never seen before, and you say, well, he ain't gonna last long. He does everything that you think is gonna happen, and he defies it, and you're like, and then the audience is like, wow, okay, did not see it. Was his role expanded as he wrote it?
No, that was always the idea. And I love to see that work when you're seeing it with an audience, because when he comes back into the house, everyone's like, oh, he's gonna die, the boyfriend's gonna die. And then when he does all these things, people just love it, and they like cheer.
That MacGyver-ish.
Yeah.
That's
now, when James Wan comes calling, what was your first thought?
Well, I mean, it's such a surreal experience. So, I mean, what happened was we made this short for no money, you know, back home in Sweden.
Just the two of us.
Yeah, for a contest. And a few months after that, because we didn't make the top six finalists, but I won the Best Director Award, and we figured that was it. But then a few months after that, it just blew up online. It started getting, like, millions of views, and it was just...
What does it mean? Is it just numbers, or what is this?
Yeah, and then all these people from Hollywood wanted to talk to us, and I was, you know, getting contacted by agents and managers and producers and studios, and it was like, I had to make like a spreadsheet of everyone I'd talked to and what said last just to keep track of it all. And I had to get like an IMDb Pro account just to see who they were. And like, and so one of the first producers that got in touch was Lawrence Gray, who was someone I, you know, really connected with. It seemed like he knew what he was doing, and he was really interested in making this into a feature. And he had... you know, talked to James Wan about maybe making something together, and he figured maybe this could be it. And so James had seen the short online and really liked it, but he didn't know if there was enough there for a movie. So I wrote like a treatment of what I wanted the story and the characters to be that Lawrence gave to James, and he really liked that, felt that, okay, this could be a movie. So Lawrence flew us out here for a couple of weeks to meet with James, and James got New Line involved because they have their relationship. And it just came together really great and smoothly, and people keep saying that, don't get used to that, because that's not usually how it works.
But it felt like from that November trip in 2014 to the March date when we flew over here in 2014.
Yeah, we didn't really know. It's like, is it going to happen? Is it not?
No, it was like every week, it was like, we know more next week, we'll know more next week, and we just waited and waited, and I had a job, so I had to tell them that I might be going to Hollywood in a while, but I don't know when. Is that okay? I need time off. But they had been part of this entire story. They have heard about everything that's happened, so they wanted to help me as best as they could. But when Hollywood called and kind of said, like, it's happening, come on Friday, I had to quit my job because they couldn't give me any time off. But they said, if you come back in a few months, you will get a new job. We will make it for you. But we kind of realized quickly that we wouldn't be going back in a few months.
Yeah, because it just happened so fast that we just locked the door at home and got on a plane. And then for the first week, the studio paid for a hotel here. And then we had to sort of find places on Airbnb where we could stay, you know,
because we couldn't get a big lease because we don't have credit score here, and we didn't know when we would be going home, so it was month to month to month. So it was now in January, now we have a real apartment.
And I mean, so we just sort of went along with this adventure to just see what happened, really. Because when we first got here, you know, we were invited to this Furious 7 had made like $1 billion or something, and so they were having this party for James to sort of celebrate that. So we were invited to that when we'd just gotten here, and we were like, we didn't have any money. We had to borrow everything we could from our parents just to be able to afford to stay here. And so we were invited to this mansion in Beverly Hills with these celebrities, like Vin Diesel was there, and like
Adrian Brody.
And we were just, you know, we felt like such imposters because we were these broke Swedes who had just sort of gotten into this Hollywood party.
It sounds like Hollywood, though.
So we were just standing like in a corner speaking Swedish to each other, like looking like, trying to look like we knew what we were doing, but we're just saying like, this is so weird.
It's
like,
so
what the hell
crazy
are we doing here? Like,
and I had like, the dress I was wearing I bought in Goodwill, and the zipper broke in the back on the day just before I was going to, I was just trying it on in the morning. And the woman, we rented a garage turned into two apartments, and the woman running the other part of the garage was actually a seamstress, so she fixed my dress, and like, she had to kind of sew it on me so I couldn't remove it without breaking it. And she was also a hairdresser, so she fixed my hair. But it's like that we were just, what do we do when we're going to this crazy fancy party and we have no money, and this is just so new to us?
That's MacGyver, right?
Actually,
that's a movie, right?
Well, there's that show on Showtime where they bring these Brits over to pitch a show with Matt LeBlanc. It sounds like kind of like that.
Episodes.
Yeah.
I think this whole journey that you guys went on is fascinating, but I think it's kind of, and I don't know how you feel about it, and you can kind of speak a little bit to it, but, you know, in the age of online video, where so many people could just put up, anyone could put up a video on YouTube or Vimeo or any of these sites, there starts to become this fascinating storyline now of directors doing short films, putting it online, and then being discovered. Fede Alvarez, who did Evil Dead and now has Don't Breathe, and now you.
Mama as well.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, I guess the technology and kind of like how it opens doors for creativity?
I mean, I think it's the best time ever to be a filmmaker because you have all these tools available. Like, you can record audio on one of these and you can shoot video with one of those. So it's like, you know, there's no one really stopping you from creating these things, and you can put them up online where everyone can see them. And you also have all these communities with people sharing their knowledge of, you know, this is how you use this software, this is how you can build your own dolly, or so it's like you have film school and film exhibition and everything online. And you know, and it's weird because you never know what that thing is that will resonate with people. So I think the only thing you can do is just follow your passion and do what you like, not what you think others will like. Because like we had no idea that our little 2.5 minute short would lead to all this. That was just one short of many we were going to make, you know.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have this idea still that you need somebody bigger than you to kind of help you along, that you need somebody else's help to get there. But I think we've realized with this that you don't need that. You can make things with your family and your friends, and you can make things with what you have. We made lights with IKEA stuff, like a trash can. Like we used all these things that we had, and we made the short. The budget or the limitations actually kind of created the concept for it, because we didn't have fancy lighting, so we had to have a lot of darkness, and it kind of helps with the creativity in that sense. And I think if you do stuff, you get better and better for everything you put up there, and hopefully something will be noticed. And you might not get to Hollywood, but maybe you will be famous on YouTube, or maybe yeah. you will get connections in your own hometown, and you get friends on YouTube. And
I've heard that about other shorts as well, that people have gotten at least attention and yeah. meetings in Hollywood. You know, maybe they don't get turned into features, but yeah. it's sort of a first step to getting somewhere.
Was that intimidating to you? I'm sorry, real quick. Was that intimidating to you because of the fact that someone was telling us that it literally was like a 1-year turnaround mm-hmm. from page to script. Was that intimidating for you? For like,
yes.
I made a small thing and then like...
Yeah, I mean, I'd never been on a film set before. And now, like, first time on a film set, I was the director. It was like, oh, okay. So... it was just so much I didn't know, because, you know, we were flown halfway across the world, and, like, here's the film team, and here's, you know, we're going to make a movie. And I had to ask the first AD, like, so when do I actually say action? Like, I didn't know. So, I mean, this was film school for me, really, just to learn how it works. And
it's still that adventure, because this is our first junket, so we have no idea how any of it works. Everything that has happened from that day we flew over a year and a half ago has been new, so it's like we just follow along and see what happens, and then maybe in the future we will kind of know what this meant.
Yeah, but and yeah. it's just weird how it all happened.
Yeah.
But it feels like yeah, we'll always have that sort of safety net of
yeah.
even if this whole thing doesn't work out, then we can still make our movies, because
yeah.
no one can stop us.
Where did the inspiration of this film come from?
Well, you mean the short, or how
yeah,
it all
the short,
started?
Yeah,
the
short.
I mean,
yeah.
the short started with that thing of... I mean, we were trying to figure out, okay, what scary thing can we do in an apartment with one actor? And it was like, you know, that's thing that I'm sure a lot of people have experience, where you turn off the lights
mm-hmm.
at night and you think like, hey, that shadow looks like a person, and you have to turn it back on.
Yeah.
And it's like, what if there actually was something there every time you turn the lights off?
We had just bought that. It's a coat rack standing at the end of the
mm-hmm.
hallway. We had bought that a few days earlier, and to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night from our bedroom, we have to go through that hallway. So every time it's like it's a human
mm-hmm.
shape at the end of the hallway. You have to turn the lights on and see it, what
yeah.
it really was.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then for the feature, since we didn't have like a feature plan, it just felt like, okay, what should the feature be? But it felt like, since we didn't really have a story in the short, as long as we stayed true to the concept, the story could be anything, really. And it kind of started with, I had this idea of, like, it felt like there was some sort of thing you could do with mental illness, because that's sort of a darkness in people or something. And I had this idea of, you know, in many horror movies you have a little kid who has an imaginary friend who
yeah.
turns out to be a ghost, but I figured like it would be so much scarier if it was the parent who had the imaginary friend, because as a child you're dependent on your parent, and you know, so what can you do in that situation? And it sort of spun off from there, really.
And also too, the short is just me in our apartment, so people kind of have said that they recognize themselves in me, and that it's not like they want me to die, because they fear for me, kind of. So the short, the movie had to be that contained story of just a few people and their relationships, and you had to kind of know them to care for them.
Yeah, I think that's the key to horror, really. Like, you have to care about the characters, because, I mean, some horror movies, you almost want the people to die, and that can be fun too, but it's scarier when you're like really, you're really invested in the people.
In my initial reaction to the film, I borrowed a lyric from a popular song. I said that Lights Out goes from 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah.
Get the party started right away.
Yeah.
No fat whatsoever in the first act. Now, would you attribute this to the fact that it was a based on a short, under 3 minutes?
Yeah.
So based on that being your style, so to speak, or the blueprint, would you say that that's what inspired you to just get on with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think most movies today are longer than they need to be, so it's like, let's just get on with it. And I know that was a bit of a fear at moments as well, because Lawrence was like, well, are there any good movies that are under 90 minutes? It's like, sure, why not? Yeah.
Lights Out.
I see some James Wan influence, especially with sound, because his movies scare me because of the sound and the tread. I mean, what was the influence that he had on the film?
Well, sound has just always been important to me as well, like with
the
shorts.
It's a big, big part.
Because it feels like, in horror movies in particular, you know, you can have like a blacked out room and just have creepy sounds. And what you imagine there to be in there will most likely be scarier than whatever rubber suit you can put in there. So, and for all of our shorts, I've spent the most time on the audio than anything else, really. So yeah, it's super
important. So you can see why James Wan was attracted to your style, because you guys have similar,
similar tastes. Yeah.
Could you guys talk a little bit about why Diana's character is female, and what, you know, how the story would differ if it were a male sort of ghost or figure?
Well, it just felt, I mean, there's so many male-centric movies, so why not have one starring females? And it felt like, I mean, it was a female silhouette in the short,
yeah,
so it's like,
because it was just, we just had me to work with, so it had to be a female in the short, so, yeah.
Yeah, and it, like, I wanted to sort of play with that as well, to have Brett be the sort of more of the typical female character who sort of is a bit clingy and wants this relationship, mm-hmm. and it's just
clingy.
Well,
I'm glad you said it. Not me.
Yeah, but you need to mix it up a bit.
Yeah.
You know, you just mentioned how important the sound design was to you, and I remember how The Exorcist, they did like very kind of like ingenious things, like, you know, they had like a jar of bees that they held up to the microphone.
Yeah.
Did you guys do any kind of like really unexpected things like that to produce some of the sounds?
I mean, the most important thing to me was how Diana sounded when she moved, and it took a lot of sort of experimentation to get that right, because the initial sounds they did was sort of more slimy, and I had to like, no, it has to be sort of dry and sort of more crackly.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, and especially those sounds as well.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
But the idea is that she burned to death, so it can't be any water in there. It has to be very dry and crackly.
Yeah, and yeah, the scratching as well. And I you know, like, there's actually, you know, when she's drawing on the pad in the closet, that's actually the version I recorded on one of those.
Honestly.
Because I did that one for the temp, and then it was like, and they did, you know, try to recreate that, and it was like, no, that's not what I did, it's exactly what I want. Let's just use that in the film, because I'm
staying
very particular about sound.
I heard a story about for the Hunt Red October, that the sound designer or the person in charge of sound would just go around everyday life and just record like squeaky things here and there, whatever.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, I have my own sort of sound library that I've built up during the years of just recording everything. Like, and we were very lucky in Gothenburg to have an apartment with very creaky floors, so I have like this whole collection of just walking on creaky floors that I can use.
Los Angeles, the talent keeps on giving.
Yeah.
I think they're taking us.
So, what's next for you?
Yeah.
Are you planning your next?
Well, right now I'm directing Annabelle. So, yeah, we're shot for 3 weeks now, and I mean, they were happy with Lights Out, and they came to me and were like, "Do you want to do Annabelle too?" I was like, "Yes, let's keep doing it." But it means I don't sleep a lot because I do this and then I shoot. You know.
Yeah.
Did you learn one thing from the first film that you're taking to the next film?
Absolutely. It just feels more sort of relaxed because on that first movie it was like, oh, this is my shot at Hollywood. I have to make this awesome. Now it feels like, okay, now I know how movies are made here, at least somewhat, you know. I know when to say action.
Thank you.
I had sweaty palms when I